Welcome to Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the show that brings you financial education that we never learned in high school. All I ever learned how to do was balance a checkbook in high school. I never learned about how to invest, build wealth. That's what this show is all about, helping you navigate this corrupt Wall Street world so we can actually make some money and grow some wealth in our family. On today's show, Congress goes back to work this morning after their big spring break. First on their list, of course, is the massive new stimulus. We're going to deep dive that massive stimulus plan and where they'll get support, maybe or not, from Republicans, who will be the big roadblocks to that. We'll cover that. Also, Fed Chief Jerome Powell on 60 Minutes last night gave a revealing interview about the economy. We're going to dissect the news around his thoughts on inflation and other things. And did you know that the 2G cell networks are shutting down? Remember 2G? Remember how excited we were to get 2G phones? Well, guess what? We're going to have an interview with the CEO of a company on the front lines of this move to 4G and 4G sensors so that businesses can track their fleets. You do not want to miss this interview. I am bullish on this company, and you might want to jump in and invest as well. Morning Invest starts right now. Well, if you want to be more informed and learn something new every morning, you should just join our daily newsletter. We send it out by email first thing every morning to your inbox. It's very easy to get. Just go to morninginvest.com. It looks like this when you sign up. You get it between 6 and 7 a.m., and depending on where you live in the country. The best part is it's free. So simply go to morninginvest.com, put in your email address, and you'll be added to our list. All right. So welcome into the show. Let's start with the markets this morning and check with things because we just got some breaking news just a few minutes ago on Bitcoin, and Bitcoin surging once again past $60,000. It hit 61 over the weekend. It dropped back down about 50, 58, 59. It kind of been sitting there. Folks, this is the new normal. This is the new normal now for Bitcoin. And, you know, it's only going to get bigger. It's only going to go broader. Robert Kiyosaki thinks it'll hit 1 million. A number of experts believe it's going to hit at least 100,000, could even hit 100,000 before summertime. So that's Bitcoin, BTC, just surging right now. Some other news right now on Ethereum. Let's check Ethereum, the other big player, their blockchain platform, which is a lot of, I think this is the biggest play right now with a ton of upside potential. And of course, I did a video this weekend about Ethereum. And I said it was a good buy when you could buy it at 600. I said it was a good buy when you could buy it at 1500. Now I think it's still a great buy, even if it's over 2,050 bucks right now. So Ethereum is, a lot of people believe it could hit 10,000 before the summer as well. So Ethereum, Bitcoin, two big moves overnight. Let's also check gold and silver prices this morning. Gold down a little bit. I think this might be a perfect buy for gold time right now too, because a lot of people moving into crypto and they're getting back into the broader stock market right now because of just, you know, things that Fed Chair Jerome Powell was saying last night. So gold prices down. This might be a good entry point for gold, and also silver prices down. So on precious metals might be a good time to jump into that. And the market overall been, this weekend is kind of quiet, and it was interesting to see this sort of weird calm that's been hitting Wall Street. This is the first time in 13 months that we've had this kind of calm. And a lot of people wondering, like, what's next? Like, are we just about to explode with a boom? It looks like that. It looks like we could be in for a huge boom. We'll get to Fed Chief Jerome Powell's comments on the economy in a moment and why we could be in for a real, this could be the roaring 20s for the first time. We were supposed to have the roaring 20s like last year, and that didn't happen because of the pandemic. So we'll get to that and more. Plus, our top story this morning, let's go there. Congress is returning to town for the first time in 2 weeks. The House comes in tomorrow. By the way, they had a nice spring break, right? They deserve some much needed time off. So the House comes in tomorrow. The Senate comes back today at 3 o'clock this afternoon. It'll have its first vote this afternoon at 5:30 p.m. It's now the beginning of a long slog of a process to pass or not to pass some version of President Joe Biden's massive infrastructure package, the American Jobs Plan, they're calling it. The next 4 to 6 weeks are going to be critical here, because, and here are some things to watch to see if things are on track or if they've gone wildly off into a ditch somewhere. Number one thing we'll be watching is out of Oregon, Representative Peter DeFazio. He's the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure. And he has said that he wants to get a bill written, and into his committee by May. So a whole nother month it's going to take to write this thing. That's going to be key to getting this package through the House by July 4th, because that's where Speaker Pelosi said was her goal, July 4th. The other big thing to watch here is Senator Joe Manchin, of course, of West Virginia. It's going to be crucial to anything that Biden wants to get done in the Senate. Where does he land on this corporate tax rate? Does he draw like a really hard line in the sand using reconciliation? Will he cave on reconciliation? Is he going to go bigger on, you know, is he going to try to raise the roof on infrastructure? All of these decisions are key because, let's be real, this guy, Manchin, is the biggest power player in this 50-50 Senate right now. All eyes on him. And we could argue Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona as well, but really it's Manchin who's the power player here. So what about Republicans? Let me know in the chat. Does anyone care if Democrats work with Republicans on this bill? Let me know. Does anyone care about them? I mean, you know that President Biden today is going to be meeting with Republicans at the White House. They're going to have this meeting where he's going to once again say, I'm open to listening. I'm going to hear you. I want to hear what you have to say. But frankly, they're going to move on. I don't know why they are even paying lip service to this. As David, you like to say, it's just like filibustering. They're just wasting time. I mean, at least with this time, they've got a long time to actually have to write this bill. So they've got actually a little bit of time on their hands, I guess. They can do all this little dog and pony show. Liz Cheney, speaking yesterday, says that, she's a Republican, of course. She says that an infrastructure bill would need to be totally rebuilt from the ground up in order to win any kind of Republican support, which is kind of funny because almost everything that's in this bill, Republicans have mostly supported before when Trump was president. I love when they suddenly, now that it's a Biden bill, we can't support this stuff. Here's Liz Cheney.
And I think there is something to that in terms of wrangling cats, no doubt.
That's probably right.
Back in 2017, you did support the idea of spending, President Trump's proposal of $1 trillion on infrastructure. Nothing ever came of that, of course, but you like the concept. Why are you opposed to it now?
Well, it's a very different proposal, obviously. Something less than 6%, as you mentioned, of this proposal that President Biden has put forward is actually focused on infrastructure. The National Association of Manufacturers has said that we will probably lose over 1 million jobs if this is enacted. And you are certainly going to see, in addition to the corporate tax increases in the bill, you'll see middle-class tax increases. This is a pattern that we watch the Democrats use time and again, where they massively increase spending, they massively expand the size and scope of the federal government, and then they come back around and impose middle-class tax increases. So those are not things that we support, not things that I support.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. That's a pile of garbage. That's not accurate at all, what you just said. You know, I'm reminded of The Last Jedi, where Luke is like, none of what you just said is true. Nothing that just came out of your mouth is accurate. Cutting jobs. I mean, the job estimates are millions of new jobs created. We'll get to that in a moment with Pete Buttigieg, who gets pushed on that very question. But this idea of raising taxes on the middle class, and also this idea that Democrats are solely responsible for increasing the size of government. Hello, have you been around the past few years? Who was president with the amount of spending? Republicans don't get to stand on any kind of sanctimonious hill anymore about spending, okay? They're just as bad as Democrats when it comes to spending. You don't get to play that card anymore. There's no such thing as a Republican that doesn't spend money. Every year, I mean, you're even pushing President Biden right now on increasing the amount of money that he's going to give out to the military in the defense contract. You're all for that. You think his $715 billion to the defense contractors is small, and you want him to spend more. So it's okay to spend money on wars, but when we want to talk about roads and bridges, then you have a problem with it.
That tax increase you're talking about with the National Association of Manufacturers, that was losing 1 million jobs over 2 years. It was specifically targeting the corporate tax rate going about 28%. Is that an area you're focusing in on? If Speaker Pelosi offers you an olive branch and says we'll go down to 25%, for example, I mean, is that something you can work with?
Look, the bill would need to be fundamentally redone. It would need to be a different bill. It would need to actually focus on infrastructure, not on so many of the additional Green New Deal spending priorities that are focused on helping Democrat allies around the country. You know, we have already, as you pointed out, appropriated trillions of dollars since January and last year as well. I'm really concerned about the impact on the economy, the potential inflationary pressure that we might see with this additional injection of cash, and so much of it is unnecessary.
So much of it is unnecessary. Okay. Well, we had a story in the newsletter this morning about our inability to even handle charging cars in the United States. I mean, most of the homes in the United States, I don't know about you, David, but I don't have in my home the ability to, unless I got it installed and had it upgraded, the ability to charge an electric car. You know, most of those plugs that you use for that, was it 240 watt, are to plug in your dishwasher or your washer and dryer, right? Most people don't have those anywhere else in the house. They don't have them in their garage. So we are woefully behind the times when it comes to green energy infrastructure, like what China has done in their infrastructure. We're not even close. We have a lot of growing to do. And so I know we can just focus on roads and bridges and keep saying that over and over as if that's the only thing that matters. Like if that's all that infrastructure is right now, when we clearly know it's not, and how many millions of kids are left behind because they don't have internet access. So again, Republicans aren't going to support any of this. There's no support coming from the GOP on any of this. And Democrats are going to have to go it alone, yet they'll play this little dog and pony show. Meanwhile, Pete Buttigieg was on Sunday with Chris Wallace. He was on the Sunday show, and Chris pushed him on this question about having to defend himself over how many jobs would actually be created in this infrastructure plan. They've been floating a lot of different numbers out there. Like, what is actually accurate here? And good for Chris on pushing the Biden White House on this question.
Whatsoever. I want to give you another fact check. All of you in the Biden administration have been selling this plan as a huge jobs creator. Here you are just last Sunday.
The American Jobs Plan is about a generational investment. It's going to create 19 million jobs. And we're talking about economic growth that's going to go on for years and years.
But it turns out the study you're citing from Moody's Analytics says the economy will add 16.3 million jobs without the infrastructure bill and 2.7 million more with it. So it doesn't, as you said last Sunday, create 19 million jobs. Again, Secretary Buttigieg, why mislead folks?
Well, you're right. I should have been more precise. The 19 million jobs that'll be created are more than the jobs that'll be created if we don't do the plan. And it's very important to make this point. As
right,
you just
showed
us,
2 million more,
Moody's
not,
is
not
saying that we
million.
Will create 2.7 million. Yeah, exactly. It'll create 2.7 million more jobs than if we don't do it. And that's very important because there are people on this network and others saying with a straight face that this would somehow reduce the number of jobs. In fact, at least according to that Moody's analysis, 2.7 million additional jobs if we pass this package, just further proof that it's good for the economy and taken as a whole, it's going to add jobs compared to doing nothing.
So I love when politicians, you know, they throw out, we heard this during the Obamacare years, right? We hear this under Trump. These politicians, they get these random studies and they love to throw them around. The truth is we have no idea. Can we all just be honest and say, no one has any idea. Republicans go on TV, Liz Cheney goes on TV and says it's going to cost 1.9 million. Pete Buttigieg goes on and says it's going to, you know, increase jobs by 3 million. Can we just all look straight in the camera and say, we don't know. We don't have any idea. We have no freaking idea. We know, remember during the Obama years, of course, you know, Solyndra and all of these other big businesses were going to get tons of money. There were shovel-ready projects. None of them were like shovel-ready. During the Bush years, we heard the same thing. I would love an accurate accounting. Like, how many actual jobs were created during these programs? Like, what is the truth now that we have a number of years behind after these things roll out? We'll find out. Meanwhile, let's talk about inflation and the economy. So you're going to hear a lot of talk over the next few weeks about whether this Biden plan and the trillions of dollars that Democrats want to pump into the economy is going to spike inflation, right? Fed Chief Jerome Powell played down those fears last night during an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes. Powell said, basically, we can afford to wait and see actual inflation appear before we raise interest rates. Let's listen to what Powell had to say last night.
In the Great Depression, the Fed's mandate is to keep the economy warm enough to produce maximum employment, but not so hot as to set off runaway inflation.
What the Fed has done traditionally is use economic models to predict inflation and then raise interest rates, tap the brake, if you will, before inflation happens. Is that what you're planning on doing?
No, it's not. And really what we've done is we've updated our understanding of the economy and therefore our policy framework to the way the economy has evolved. The economy has changed. And what we saw in the last couple of cycles is that inflation never really moved up as unemployment went down. We had 3.5% unemployment, which is a 50-year low for much of the last 2 years before the pandemic, and inflation didn't really react much. That means that we can afford to wait to see actual inflation appear.
So, in other words, they're going to wait until this inflation hits about 2%, okay? So higher inflation is coming. They're waiting on it. They want it to come. We've heard it now repeatedly. So again, if you've got your money in the U.S. dollar, get ready. It's coming. So what the Fed chair said is, look, we're going to wait till it hits 2%, and then we're going to let it go a little bit beyond 2% inflation. And then is when, once you see how that's playing out, then we'll raise interest rates. So higher interest rates are coming, and inflation is coming. That means the U.S. dollar will be hurt, okay, more than it already is. And that means interest rates are going up. So their main benchmark interest rate, and then that will affect mortgage rates, that will affect credit cards, that will affect all of those things. So if you were thinking about doing a refinance right now or pulling out some money in a home equity line of credit for investing in real estate or some other play, you know, be aware that this is going to be coming soon to a bank near you. But it's the economy that I'm most interested in hearing about, because there are a number of signs right now that finally we're heading into this roaring 20s. I don't know about you, but like, you know, my birthday is December 31st. So I remember we went and we had a birthday celebration and going into the year 2020, right? And it was going to be, wow, the roaring 20s. This economic news is great. Everything is on the upswing. And then, of course, the pandemic hits, right? So we never really got to head into the roaring 20s. It was set back. We were supposed to hit there last year. And now Powell basically threw out some stunning numbers on the economy and how we really could be heading into the roaring 20s on the economic front. Listen to his take on these numbers.
What we're seeing now is really an economy that seems to be at an inflection point. And that's because of, you know, widespread vaccination and strong fiscal support, strong monetary policy support. We feel like we're at a place where the economy is about to start growing much more quickly and job creation coming in much more quickly. So the principal risk to our economy right now really is that the disease would spread again. You know, it's going to be smart if people can continue to socially distance and wear masks.
You seem to be saying, not about COVID, but about the economy, that we're out of the woods.
Well, I'd say that we and a lot of private sector forecasters see strong growth and strong job creation starting right now. So really, the outlook has brightened substantially.
What are your projections for growth and employment?
If you look at what private sector forecasters are saying, or what forecasters who sit around this table who are on the Federal Open Market Committee, our rate setting committee, what they're forecasting is growth for this year in the range of 6 or 7%, which would be the highest level in, you know, 30 years.
That's pretty freaking good. 6-7% growth, the highest in 30 years. So we have an opportunity in our hands, you know, if we're studying the markets, if we're seeing where the puck is going, to be able to be nimble, to be investing in the right places, to put our money in growth areas. Certainly, you know, certainly having your money in stocks or in different assets that are going to benefit as a result of this massive infrastructure play. So green energy, any kind of infrastructure play on the manufacturing side, real estate, home builders, of course, are just trying to keep up with demand right now. I know we are trying to keep up with demand. But of course, you know, at the heart of all of this is this wacky recovery, because it's this K-shaped recovery. So we can talk about growth. We can talk about Wall Street being happy. We can talk about builders doing well, all of that. But then, of course, there's the K, right? And the K is that it plummeted and then it was going back up, skyrocketing like a V, right? For the, you know, big businesses doing very, very well. And then there's that other part of the K, the leg of the K, that's just not doing well. There, and Scott Pelley in this interview with Chair Powell said, you know, I don't know if you know this, but like near here, like a few blocks away, there's people living in tents. Like how many people watching right now are still struggling to pay your bills, still struggling to pay your rent, still struggling to pay your mortgage? So Powell was asked that question, you know, how do we have this disconnect? And it seems like, you know, at least Powell gets it. Like he's not, he doesn't have his head in the clouds where he doesn't see it and he's not aware of it. But he says something really interesting about who is most affected by this downturn.
When does she and everyone else like her get their jobs back?
You know, there are something like 8.5-9 million people, maybe even more than that, depending on how you count it, who were working in February of last year before the pandemic and have lost their jobs. It's going to take some time. The good news is that we're starting to make progress now. The numbers show that people are returning to restaurants now. We're not going to forget those people who were left on the beach, really, without jobs as this expansion continues. We're going to continue to support the economy until the recovery is really complete.
You have people living in tents about a block from here. Have you seen them?
Yes, I have. Yes, I can tell you exactly where they are. I see them coming to and from work regularly.
When you see those tents, what do you tell yourself?
Well, it tells me that we don't have the answer to everything, but we, the job that we do for the benefit of the public is incredibly important, and we do understand that if we get things right, we can really help people. If the people who are at the margins of the economy are doing well, then the rest of it will take care of itself.
So the area that he's talking about, the businesses that were specifically hurt are the ones, and the people that lost their jobs, the industries that were specifically hurt are the ones that have to deal with the public. So all these Wall Street firms that don't have to deal with human beings, like they don't have to work at a grocery store and put groceries in a bag, those companies are fine. But it's the people that at work at the hotels, it's the people that work in fast food, it's the people that work at restaurants who just got slammed. I mean, this is America, where we literally drive down the street and there are people sleeping in tents. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's happening in this country. So when asked about all of this, you know, is this growth rational? Powell said that his economic models could not identify inflated asset bubbles, but instead focuses on the strength of the economy, and he said its ability to react. He said that the chance of a repeat global financial crisis like the one we had back in 2008 is very, very, very low. So I think you're seeing some of that sentiment this morning in the markets. I mean, S&P 500 slipping a little bit, but overall, I mean, numbers are really, really high. Wall Street's excited. Investors are excited. So we could be, folks, heading into this roaring 20s. Let's just hope that the in this new economy that there are 20 million people who are not permanently left behind as all of these people start to make a lot of money. So I'll be focused on that. A new report out this morning shows just, let's talk about CEOs. Just how well America's CEOs are doing. New Wall Street Journal story this morning says that CEO pay surged. Yeah, it surged. Up $13.7 billion. Isn't that great? Executive compensation for 2020 is on track right now for a record-breaking year. Not surprising. Sean Bissman, who is a corporate governance consultant, said, quote, "I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before in terms of the number of changes we've seen on incentive plans. The median salary for over 300 CEOs from America's biggest companies in 2020, it's up $13.7 billion. That's up from $12.8 million in 2019. Pay rose for 206 of the 322 CEOs in the journal analysis. The median raise was nearly 15%. But here's the best part. Here's my favorite part of this story. Compensation jumped for some executives at battered companies. Battered. At Norwegian Cruise Line, for instance, which recorded $4 billion in losses and tons of layoffs. Of course, their sailing stopped because of the pandemic. Their revenue fell by 80%. But the CEO, Frank Del Rio, his pay doubled. Explain. What? His pay doubled to $36.4 million, in part with bonuses tied to a 3-year contract extension, according to the company's proxy. So, and a number of companies were hurt, and that this Wall Street Journal analysis looked at, where they had lots of layoffs, but the CEOs managed to double their salaries. Shocking, right? I'm shocked to see that gambling is going on here. Not surprising whatsoever. Not surprising whatsoever. We're going to be joined by a CEO who's one of the good guys. He's going to be joining us next on the show. He actually puts his money where his mouth is and invests in his own company. And I'm incredibly bullish on this company. I saw someone just post here a super chat that says they've already invested in this company and they're going to be investing more. We're going to be joined by the CEO, Chris Bercy, in a moment here on the show. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a fantastic company, big supporter of our show, and I couldn't be more thankful for them. They provide fresh, pre-measured ingredients, mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your front door. Skip any trips to the grocery store. You can count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. David, didn't you? You said you loved that Kraft burger. What was the one you made last time? I made that Kraft burger. It's delicious.
Yeah, and one of the fish ones that I had, but everything that I've had from them has been really good. So I've not had any complaints yet. It is like you do have to. It sends you the ingredients, so you do have to cook. But that's actually kind of fun. So Jennifer and I would cook, and then we would have some left over that we'd use in our other recipes and stuff. So I don't know. It's just a kind of a cool experience, and the foods, like the recipes, are really good.
Yeah, and you get all the recipes. They're easy, colorful, and it's great to work with the kids on them too. So they're all pre-cut, pre-measured, and you can just, you know, do that together as a family. It takes like less than like 30 minutes, like some less than 20 minutes. Lightning prep meals, really fast and delicious. They have a wide variety of fresh, easy options for all three meals a day, plus every snack and a special treat in between.
Well, so, and they have
I love
like all the sauces and stuff. They come in little packets of sauces, every sauce you need. And they had this Asian bowl that I ate, and the sauce that they had in it was kind of like a mayonnaise in a way, but it was really, really good. Like I was like, I felt like I just ordered from a restaurant and I made it.
that's high praise. I know. I think you were talking about the pork burgers too. And these are so good. Crispy Parmesan chicken. Delicious. I'm getting hungry just looking at this stuff right now. But guess what? You're going to get 12 free meals. How about that? 12 free meals they're giving us for watching our show today. Go to HelloFresh.com/invest12 and use the code INVEST12 to get 12 free meals, including free shipping. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/invest12. Use the code INVEST for 12 free meals. We thank HelloFresh for supporting Morning Invest. Okay, so a few insignificant companies you probably never heard of, like Verizon, Sprint, you know, US Cellular, AT&T. Oh yeah, really, really tiny, tiny companies. Well, guess what? They're actually shutting down their 2G networks permanently. Remember how excited we were for 2G back in the day? Well, now it's going to be gone. For most of us, this isn't a big deal. You know, we buy a new phone, 4G, 5G, we're good. But for companies with thousands of sensors that rely on this 2G network, it's a madhouse right now. They're scrambling to replace millions of hardware gadgets with 4G ones. Are you familiar with the phrase, you know, if I just had a dollar for every time? Well, that's how our guest lives by this phrase today on the show. With us today is Mr. Chris Bercy, who is the CEO of Direct Communication Solution, who is a pioneer in the world of sensors and who stands to potentially align shareholders of his company with this mad migration from 2G to 4G. And he may actually collect a dollar every time someone replaces a sensor, hence the phrase. So he's made a big name for himself by being able to program and code a proprietary sensor that does the work of the older ones. And therefore, those products is 70% cheaper. I made a full video about it yesterday because it's such an interesting moment. So I want you to check out that video. But let's get more details from the man himself, the visionary in all of this. Mr. Bercy joins us now. Chris, great to see you this morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So Chris, 2020 has shown us all things can change really fast in our lives because of one, you know, seemingly invincible molecule. We've all witnessed the importance of not being in the dark, of knowing accurately what's going on in the world. So how is IoT and sensors helping to better the information and the decision makers receive in real time and critical? How critical are they for our future right now? Doctors and just information getting out there. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, from our side, what we really see is, you know, with the global pandemic, with the way the world's changed and business has changed, you know, having access and visibility real time into your assets, your food storage, your pharmaceuticals, anything along those lines, you know, they're all critical in the sense that, you know, they're all time-based, temperature-based, humidity-based. There's some factor that will, you know, really, you know, change the way that we're doing these, you know, these sensors and these types of solutions. So, you know, when you really get down to it, you know, it's really being able to provide the technology via IoT solutions to allow business owners to really harvest all that big data that's available to them with their building, their assets, their, you know, their food, their machines, and then really harvesting that and turning it into, you know, usable ROI for them so they can efficiently run their businesses.
Well, in China, you know, technology is advancing fast. And we know that in the United States, in order to fund the much needed green energy initiatives that we've been obviously hearing about, and of course, with Joe Biden pushing for this big infrastructure and environmental sustainability, there's huge infrastructure programs being planned. All these modern nations are basically moving from 2G to 4G and even 5G. Heck, I'm even hearing about 6G now. So what happens to all of those millions of sensors and hardware that is currently serviced by AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, US Cellular, which are on those 2G networks? What happens to that?
Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, there will come a time the carriers will sunset those 2G networks, those older legacy networks. When they do, all those devices will go dark. So, you know, it's an opportunity. It, you know, it's almost like a second wave of IoT, if you will, right? So everything that's been deployed in the past, it's 2G technology, you know, it's going to be a hardware upgrade. So it's going to force that, you know, that technology refresh and technology transition from 2G to 4G.
Talk about this IoT technology for our audience that may not be familiar with it. You're CEO of Direct Communication Solutions, and I've learned, you know, I used to cover technology. That's what I did for a living for Fox News for many, many years. And so this, all of these things, I mean, we see some, you know, sensors obviously coming to the home. You get motion sensors, you get, you know, you enter a room. I'm really excited about what you could do possibly with like an Apple Watch, walking into a room, not having to rely on a motion sensor. But talk about this for foods, refrigeration, truck fleets. Can you give us some real world examples of what you guys do and how this is so critical?
Yeah, so if you look at any market that is in the logistics space that's transporting perishable goods, you know, being able to track those goods from, you know, the factory or the farm through the distribution cycle, through, you know, all the way down to the end user, bar, restaurant, whatever, that those stores are going into. You know, it really, it's critical to monitor that data and know, you know, that temperature has been consistent throughout. You know where the truck is, you know what the temperature is, you know how much gas is being used, the idling, you know, where the driver is, driver, you know, driver behavior, vehicle diagnostics. We can combine all that into, you know, one solution now where it's really giving people visibility from where it was manufactured to the time it lands at their front door, and then taking it a step further and, you know, managing that temperature in the walk-in freezers, managing, you know, your glycol machines, your grease, your, you know, your doors, whatever you want to manage or monitor within a building.
Now, you're a publicly traded company. I'm bullish on it, I must admit. And you have, I mean, you're being pretty humble here, and you're not talking about, like, I mean, lives can be saved here. I mean, we see in this pandemic, we're talking about medication distribution. We're seeing how important getting vaccinations out and cold storage, et cetera. Can you talk about that part of it? And you don't have to be so humble about it. I mean, this is important stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's one side. We're really kind of focused more on the, you know, the small to medium business, the bars and restaurants. And, you know, if you take California, for example, where we're headquartered, you know, we just went to 25% indoor dining, right? So if you're a business owner, you have a restaurant, trying to manage your perishable foods, you know, over this time. And, you know, do I have enough for everybody coming in? Am I going to run out? You know, just being able to monetize that data is huge for these guys, right? Because then they can run their business based on the data versus guessing.
Right. And I mean, you can help the environment in the process, right? So you're not wasting food, not throwing out extra food because you were just eyeballing it in the refrigerator, right? You're actually,
you know, that's a huge liability issue too, right? You sell food that's past its prime or, you know, tainted, or, you know, there's a lot of value in it.
Yeah.
It really is.
So Chris, you own, from a business perspective, you own, or is it true, I should ask you, I've heard this, but I don't know if it's true, that you own over 33% of the company yourself, and you've never sold a single share. I mean, are you a big believer in the future of your stock? You're holding on to it.
I think this space is prime for takeoff, and, you know, we are going to be at the forefront of it. And, you know, that's one of the benefits of being the smaller company. You know, we're still flexible, we're nimble, and, we go out and hustle every day, right? You know, we work hard for our customers. We work hard, you know, trying to create the right solutions. And, you know, no two IoT solutions are the same. And that's really where we, you know, we excel because of our experience and our knowledge and, you know, the team that I have here from an engineering perspective.
Let's talk about, you guys just received, from the news that I saw, you guys just received the largest order in your company's history. And what is happening that's so special with MI sensors that we've just heard? It's 70% cheaper than anything else on the market. Can you talk about that news?
Yeah. So the first part of it, the largest purchase order, you know, that's a direct reflection of the 2G to 4G transition, right? So it's a combination of, you know, a couple of key factors in the supply chain right now are global pandemic, as everyone's aware, and then, you know, the supply chain is stressed right now, right? So products are, you know, we're seeing longer and longer lead times. So we're really working with our customers to, you know, mitigate that and get in front of the lead times and make sure that they have product when they need. And then on the second piece of it for the My Sensors, you know, we're at the forefront of the sensor technology right now, in my opinion. We created the My Sensors in-house. We designed it. We built the firmware. We're building the platform around it. But it's really, you know, it's really the industry's first 8-in-1 sensor. So within the My Sensor tag itself, we can monitor temperature, humidity, light, air pressure, door open, door close, proximity, and a multi-purpose button. So it's a nice foundation, and it's one sensor that will, you know, sense multiple options. And that's really where the cost savings comes in, because traditionally you're buying a temperature sensor and a humidity sensor. And by the time you add up all those costs, you know, we've definitely reduced the cost and made it more palatable for the market.
You know, Chris, for my viewers who are, you know, some of them are experienced investors, some are new investors who are looking at this and thinking to themselves, you know, what's the upside potential for your stock symbol, DCSX, in the United States, at least on the United States side, DCSX. There was a recent acquisition of a competitor of yours, which showed that in comparison, your shares have a triple digit upside. So people who want to find interesting opportunities, what happened with, is it Zergo, the buyout there, and how did it reflect on your valuation?
You know, first off, good for them. I'm happy for them. They're a great group of guys. And, you know, I think it really kind of reset the bar on valuation in our industry and, you know, just the upside, the potential and, you know, all the future opportunities. Like you said, you know, we're going from 2G to 4G, 5G is on the table. People are talking about 6, 7, 8, 10G. You know, it's the technology is never going to stop. So that's really the upside.
That's great. Well, you've got tens of thousands of people watching the show right now, Chris. What are some near-term catalysts for the company that you could maybe let us in on, pull the wool back a little bit?
You know, we're investing heavily in the software side for our platform. So the MySensors platform is really it's our forward foundation for success. And then in that, you know, we built in the MyTag that we designed ourselves, but we're creating it in such a way that we can inject multiple sensor technologies, multiple sensors. So, you know, it's really going to be a true one pane of glass. It's going to incorporate, you know, the platform for the monitoring of the sensors, the airtime, all the device management on the back end. So, you know, we're working hard to make it easy for everybody else to, you know, really monetize the data that they own.
Wonderful. Well, Chris, it's been a real pleasure having you here on the show. And before I say thanks, I want to say, guys, you know, yesterday I put together an entire video about our sponsor, Direct Communication Solutions, which I'm really excited about. And because many of you requested it, on the screen, you can actually see the link right now to portfoliowealthglobal.com/DCS. So I want you to go over there. I had it co-authored with our friends from portfoliowealthglobal.com. which highlights the top three reasons right now to be bullish on DCS right now. So check out that link. And Chris, it's been a real treat having you here on the show. Thanks for the work you're doing. It's fascinating.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
My thanks to Chris for joining us on the show. We got some more news to get to here on the show. I want to talk about this Bitcoin story and Coinbase. Because there's actually huge news on Coinbase, which many of you use, which is the largest exchange to do crypto investing right now. And this Thursday, Coinbase set to go public. And the valuation before it goes live on Thursday right now is through the roof. I mean, we're talking, I think it was over $100 billion right now. And they use one of the key things about Coinbase is they use blockchain for settlement. So they've been innovating in this space. They've been continuing to innovate. This is like one of the hottest tickets in town. I'm thinking this might be one of the companies of the year to pay attention to from crypto on the crypto side. They have 56 million users on the platform in 100 plus countries. Something Coinbase could be the one of the hottest of the year and growing. I mean, and it's probably going to be very expensive, probably overinflated costs to get into this thing. And that's where, you know, heck, you have like DCSX, which is a really inexpensive play. Right now you have the $100 billion valuation that this firm is already worth as much as Goldman Sachs. You know, it's one of these things where you look at these, like when Twitter goes public or Facebook goes public, and you sort of sit there and say, oh, maybe I should have gotten in before. You know, how long ago should I have gotten into this thing? And at this time, though, it's going to be interesting to see this Thursday what happens with Coinbase going public. Also, this news, a number of CEOs got together, and this weekend, they've been pretty upset about the Georgia voting law, as I'm sure many of you are as well, and the voter suppression that's been unfolding in a number of states across the country. Well, these CEOs, of course, who were told a few weeks ago by Mitch McConnell to stay out of politics, don't stick your nose in politics at all. They got together this weekend and had a big meeting. And they are actively looking to ramp things up against these states that suppress the vote. Good for them. This also comes on the heels of Brian Kemp. Did you guys see this story? Governor Brian Kemp said Tuesday that voters that are waiting in line in Georgia, because, you know, you're not allowed to get food or water handed out anymore. Brian Kemp says, you know what? You can go ahead and just order food on Uber Eats while you're standing in line. Or Grubhub. He literally had the audacity to say, I've got a solution for you. If you're hungry while you're waiting in these historically, in these neighborhoods that are, you know, with people of color, where they end up having much longer voting lines, and they have fewer places to vote, so people have to wait hours to vote. Just go on Uber Eats. Just go to Grubhub. Yeah, we made it illegal, so we couldn't send you any food. That's okay. You can't get food or water, and it's going to take you 4 hours to vote. That's okay. Just go on Uber Eats. Must be nice for him. Paying Uber Eats just so you can get a little food while you're waiting there for hours and hours and hours. Thanks. Thanks, Georgia. Thanks to Governor Kemp. That's the news that you can use this morning. Let's check back in on Bitcoin. I'd love to open it up now. Wow, Bitcoin keep going up. Since the start of the show, look at that. And Ethereum down a little bit. Not much. But time to jump in on some of these plays right now. All right.
All right. We got 7 new members. And then Tony Breeden, did you hear that Fareed Zakaria's mom passed away from COVID yesterday?
Wow. No, I didn't.
Lynette Goodson.
Someone was asking in the chat about the stock symbol that we were... it's DCSX is the U.S.-based stock symbol, DCSX. And we'll have a link. We'll have that information in the description once this show is done. So it'll be... It's DCSX. I'll type it out here again.
Okay, so... Because I had DCSX.
That's the stock symbol. No, but that's, I know, it's confusing. The symbol on the stock exchange, the symbol on an OTC, it's DCSX, but the URL you had was correct. So okay. Just the stock symbol is DCSX.
Okay, so it's DCS is the URL.
Is the company. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lynette Goodson, new member, welcome. Ralph Mucci. I invested $1,000 and will invest more into DCS stock after researching this company. This company has tremendous growth potential. Thank you, Clayton.
You're welcome. Yeah, Tony, I only feature people here on the show that I invest in or that I believe in. So, you know, thank you for that.
Tony Joslin, are vaccines problems being underreported?
Are
vaccine problems being underreported?
I don't know if they're being underreported. I mean, look at the front page of let me pull it up here. This is the top story right now. At least it was a few minutes ago. It was the top story. Pull this up. Yeah. On Drudge right now, Pfizer can't stop this South African strain. Like, is that? I don't know. That's the top story. So I don't know that it's being underreported, but... I don't know. All these variants scare me. And like, how, you know, the thing is, we just don't know, right? I mean, we just don't. We were talking to friends last night. We just don't know. Like, will we have to get this thing every year? You know, we're going to have to get this vaccine every year. Like,
I mean, the pharmaceutical companies would love that.
Yeah, they would. So, I don't know that it's being, who knows? I mean, the thing is, we're at the mercy of these governments to tell us this information.
Well, and
do
also,
governments ever lie?
Like YouTube and stuff are suppressing anything that doesn't go with the WHO or NIH, and they have traditionally been seem to not be credible all the time. And so it's like you have scientists that are actually talking about things and YouTube suppressing it. Like, that's scary.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like Arlene says, I don't trust them. Like, you know, I mean, do you think you trust our government? Do you trust the Chinese government? Do you trust any of these governments to tell you the truth?
Leslie Lavertu, super chat. Thank you. The Alert Cool new member. Welcome. Leslie Lavertu. I was an office worker and still got laid off from a huge corporation. This is booming because of the pandemic. She got laid off from a huge corporation that is booming because of the pandemic. So a company is making a lot of money during the pandemic and she still got laid off.
Oh yeah. That's my point. That was my point earlier, talking about, you know, these CEOs that are making tons of money, their pay surged, and yet, like, Norwegian and all these people, they had to lay off, and they got double their salaries? 80% decline in profits, or, you know, 80% loss. How do you, I don't understand, like, isn't it performance-based? And you're laying people off. So I guess overall, your bottom line, because, you know, you probably got tons of money from the government, right, in bailouts. And then you got to lay a whole bunch of people off. And then that's what Wall Street rewards most of the time. Wall Street loves that. You know, they're like, oh, you're cutting the fat. We're going to pump some money into this stock. That's what happens.
James Ochoa, super chat. Thank you. Richard Lehman. BNB on Binance is up 23%, over $580 now. While you do that, Lydia Hines, thanks, Clayton. I took your advice and started a small online business, Herbal Expressions Apothecary LLC. I love it. All handcrafted by me.
Sweet. Way to go.
And then Darren Williams, Clayton, how does a person invest in DCS? Clueless on investing.
Sure. So what you need to do, because it's an over-the-counter stock, it's an OTC stock, so it's not on Robinhood or Webull or Public. You have to go to one of the other exchanges, one of the big exchanges like E-Trade or TD Ameritrade or any of those. So I use E-Trade. It's very easy to set up an account. And so that's where you can get access to some of these OTC stocks, okay? They're just OTC. They're just small stocks. That's really it. They're like, you know, it's like penny stocks. They're really very, very, very inexpensive. This is kind of like where they are before they hit the New York Stock Exchange, you know? So E-Trade is where I go. Very easy to do. You can invest like $100, you know, do whatever you want, you know, do your research on it. Watch that video that I published yesterday on it so you can dive deeper into it. And like we had one of our viewers said, they did extra homework on it and they invested in it. Again, when you realize that this company, it's like only this company that's able to have this sensor, and now like all of these companies are going to need to order that sensor from them, and 2G networks are totally going away, it's a good play.
Wanda Iden, do you feel like any future stimulus is out of the question? What are your thoughts about the $200 for Social Security recipients? Love you and David.
The 200 for Social Security recipients, 200 additional. Let me see if there's an. There was the $200 to $530 one, which was the minimum amount. These are part of the what Democrats have been wanting to push for, that additional $200 for SSI, SSDI. And those other programs. But I don't know, that hasn't been, these are the disability initiatives. So it would increase from $200 to $530, the minimum amount of monthly earnings for a month during a trial work period. I'm not sure if this was, I don't know if this was finalized. This was from, this is for those that wish to enter the workforce, if I'm not mistaken, who wish to work or are working and who wish to enter the workforce. If that's the one you're referring to, I'm not sure which one you're referring to specifically. I think it's great. Look, I think anything that they can do to increase in Social Security needs to happen. Look, when we see like CEOs making 15% increases in raises year after year after year, and we are begging for a small little cost of living increase for Social Security, it's just astonishing how low it is and ridiculous. You pay into this system your whole life, and this is all you get, you know, and these guys get millions. It's just totally out of whack. Do I think also your other question was, do I think we'll see additional stimulus? Yes. I think after this infrastructure package, there's the second phase. I'm hoping that, well, we already know they had got approval from the Senate parliamentarian to pass additional stimulus without having to use Republicans. So they get to use the reconciliation process. So yes, I feel like that's definitely going to happen.
Alicia Northwest.
What are the odds? Sorry. Yeah. I saw that there. What are the odds on more checks? That's hard to say. I don't know. If I'm a betting person on the, I would say they're pretty good actually. I think as this next batch, there's a lot of Democrats who are pushing for additional checks, Bernie Sanders and others. And so this next stimulus that's after the infrastructure very well could have some kind of additional payment. And I'm hoping that there's a push for some sort of UBI as well.
Wanda Iden, thank you for everything you do. Keep us informed.
Thank you, Wanda. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. And don't forget to subscribe to our daily newsletter. It's totally free. Just go to morninginvest.com and subscribe. You get a newsletter delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. We put a lot of work into it try to make it fun and interesting. Cover a lot of the big stories of the day to help you navigate this crazy, crazy world we live in. Like, was it one of the story we covered today? That America is not ready for our electric infrastructure projects. You know, we just don't have, or the, you know, electricity for in our homes. We don't have the standards set yet in America. We need this, where other countries are already doing it to install these different charging outlets. So under this new infrastructure, we need like 26 million new charging outlets in order for us to be able to get up to standard here. So thank you for subscribing. Thank you for joining us. Much appreciated to all of you. We will see you back here first thing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We do this show live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Now be kind to each other. Be safe out there. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning. Peace.